the devil's advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. It's getting better. Right now, I'm joined live via phone by a fine guest. He is John Nichols from The Nation. John, welcome back to the big show.
Good to be with you, brother.
John, so good. I'm always happy when you answer the call, man. John, I took note of an article. You actually shared it with me. I told you I was in the car. I hadn't done my prepping yet, but I've done the prepping. John, I've read the article. You assert that Marjorie Taylor Greene, congresswoman from the state of Georgia, should be blocked from the ballot predicated on the 14th Amendment. Well, John, we talked quite a bit about that public testimony she gave last Friday. Do you think it was convincing, the presentation made by, you know, I guess the opponents of Marjorie Taylor Greene? Do you think she will be banned? Do you think she should be banned? I think I know, but share with the audience, John.
You got about 18 questions on the table there, my friend. First and foremost, did I see the testimony? Yes, of course I did. It was comic, right?
It was.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has never, ever forgotten a single mean-spirited, destructive, awful idea that has come into her head, right? She spouts it constantly. Never forgets to attack Ilhan Omar or AOC or Mark Pocan or anybody else, right? Somehow she forgot every single thing that she did from like about November 3rd, 2020 until, you know, January 20th, 2021. Complete memory block. Nothing there. And so, of course, her testimony was absurd. It was a lie. Because when you say you don't remember something that you clearly remember, you're lying. And she lied repeatedly and got caught out immediately because, of course, CNN released the text transcript with her text to Mark Meadows, which revealed that she was actively involved in plotting a coup. And then when the initial coup attempt failed, the invasion and occupation of the Capitol, attempt to overthrow the results of a legitimate presidential election, then she proposed, or at least threw up the idea of martial law. Now, admittedly, she couldn't spell the word martial as in martial law, but she still tried. And so what you've got is somebody who, you know, is guilty as charged. There's simply no question. She meets the standard of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, which says that if you are an insurrectionist, i.e. someone who is involved in plotting a coup, or if you give aid and comfort to insurrectionists, which she did when she voted to implement the agenda of the coup plotters, which was to overturn the results from Arizona and Pennsylvania. She did so on the night of January 6th, after five people had died and more than 100 police officers had been injured by the insurrectionists who attacked the Capitol. So she's full-on guilty. There's no question of that. She's guilty. She meets the standard on all levels. Now you ask the question, what will the judge do? You know, will this judge do the right thing and issue a memorandum that effectively says she's in violation of 14th Amendment, Section 3? I think there's a possibility. The judge has at least entertained these issues. The lawyers who are involved are exceptionally talented, very, very good lawyers. They have asked late to update their submissions to strengthen them even more. And so I think there's a reasonably good argument. Then you get to the bigger challenge, which is, does Brad Raffensperger have the courage to actually do the right thing when he is involved in a Republican primary that will decide whether he keeps his job? I don't have a lot of confidence in Raffensperger. He stood up to Trump at one point. I thought that was good. Not sure that he'll do this in a primary setting. So it's up for grabs. But frankly, if the judge signals that you've got a congressperson who is in violation of the 14th Amendment and thus disqualified from running for reelection, from being on the November ballot, that's an issue you can continue to litigate and advocate on, and it also sends a signal for the rest of the country. So I think the Greene case is a huge deal. It's relevant even for Wisconsin because we have a similar lawsuit in Wisconsin targeting Ron Johnson, Tom Tiffany, and Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I'm well aware. Let me tell you, John, I was... I'd hate to say it, but I was a little boonswoggled by the defense Marjorie Taylor Greene's attorney James Bopp offered. And the only part that was convincing to me, because obviously she was lying and didn't recall anything else.
Totally,
but when prompted by her counsel, she effectively discussed a live stream and the fact that she was, quote unquote, a victim of the insurrection. And she, unlike the president, asked people to go home and be safe and all that kind of stuff. But John, subsequent to that testimony, then I've seen the text messages to Mark Meadows that happened January 17th of 2021.
After.
Yeah, and John, that's exactly when she's discussing, you know, although misspelling, martial law, and saying, you know, we know it was stolen. I mean, this was truly a
Our only hope is martial law.
It was truly one more Hail Mary. Does that newfound evidence, I don't know if it was presented at the administrative court trial. They didn't really have the chance to do full discovery. Now, do you think that should be included in the decision-making process? I certainly think it's persuasive against Marjorie Taylor Greene.
So first and foremost, the issue was raised. She was asked whether she had advocated for martial law to be declared. It's one of the many things she said she didn't
remember. I can't recall.
Now I just want to tell you something. I've covered Congress for a little bit. I know politicians a little bit about them. My sense is that you don't forget when you actually are calling for overthrowing the government. That usually sticks in your mind, right? So I think she was lying about that, first and foremost. But at this very fundamental level, the deeper level, is that, there's evidence that well after their supposed argument of mitigation, which was an argument that, you know, she was scared on January 6th, which she may well have been. And coup plotters often get scared in the middle of a coup attempt, right? That's not unheard of. Sometimes coup plotters even try to cover up their involvement in a coup attempt, as we have seen historically from places around the world. So her argument was she was scared on January 6th. Well, she wasn't so scared that 11 days later, she was advocating for the president of the United States to at least consider using the military to block the peaceful transition of power. That's what martial law is. And effectively, to implement a much deeper coup, a more profound coup than what was attempted on January 6th. So she's guiltier of being an insurrectionist than was fully revealed in the initial testimony and pleadings. So yes, Free Speech for People and the other groups, the other lawyers that are involved here, should be able to update their claims to bring this additional evidence to the judge's attention. And, I do think it makes a very conclusive case. The one final thing I'll say is don't ever be, you know, like hornswaddled by Attorney Bopp. He's one of the biggest right-wing hacks in the game. You know, I mean, he isn't like some, you know, savvy country lawyer.
No, I wasn't. You know, I wasn't fooled by his courtroom savvy. It was, I just thought that might be the thing that released the pressure and got her off the hook effectively. Folks, you're listening to
it's one of those things you're thrown out to try and get the judge to give the judge something to hang on to if he were to throw the case out.
Yes, sir. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He is John Nichols from The Nation. And if you haven't seen the newest article from John on Marjorie Taylor Greene, we posted it up at the Devil's Advocates Facebook page. You know, it's quite ironic, though. Marjorie Taylor Greene gave testimony last Friday, and she's directly contradicted by her text to Mark Meadows. And now that's in the public, public view. And I think it was Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, Republican leader in the House, came out and basically denied that he ever asked Trump to resign. It was directly contradicted like within 24 hours, John. And above and beyond that, he specifically went out against and named names in the caucus. I think it was Gozar and Gates, and said, these guys are dangerous. They're actually putting their own caucus member, Liz Cheney, in danger by directing these false attacks upon her. John, have you ever seen, people expose so quickly to public ridicule and obviously their own duplicitous cowardice natures.
Yeah, occasionally. Remember, certainly not cowardice. Kevin McCarthy's the king of cowardice. But yeah, you've seen the occasional politician. You remember James Stockdale, who was Perot's running mate, and you know appeared in the vice presidential debate and seemed his first question was, who am I? Why am I here? And so you occasionally see politicians who are very quickly revealed as being kind of not up for the moment. But you do bring in this issue of cowardice, right? And that's the big deal with Marjorie Taylor Greene. She is such a bombastic figure. She is such a cool and unusual player, right? That, you know, one would think that she's pretty firm in her convictions, right? You know, she at least, you know, kind of believes what she's saying. What was revealed by this trial is that that's not the case, right? She's not addled or confused. She knows who she is. She's very strategic. And yet when it comes to a question of where does she stand on the things she has said and she has done, when she faces the possibility of losing her congressional paycheck and losing her platform from which to speak, suddenly her memory is blanked out. She's less aware. She's less conscious than anybody else in politics. And, you know, that's just pure cowardice. She's lying in order to protect herself.
John Nichols, my fine guest. John, wanted to turn you back a little bit towards our backyard. I'm now calling her Big Lie Becky Clayfish. Rebecca Clayfish, the gubernatorial frontrunner, although one must question if she's afraid of Tim Michaels' entry into the race. He is the businessman, perhaps billionaire in the making, self-made by his own assessment. But anyways, she...
Rebecca, same way Ron Johnson is.
Yeah, yeah. But Rebecca Clayfish effectively came out and said 2020 sure feels like a rigged election. And then she said, you know, lots of things that Gableman's looking at and things, and I hope he finds some things. You know, very eloquent in her presentation of her things yesterday, John. But this was, I think, a sign of the fear of her and her campaign of Tim Michaels' entry into the race. But above beyond that, John, this is a full tact to fiction. I mean, she is now running the Rantham campaign platform.
Yeah, she's terrified, right? She's terrified by the fact that she's going to be outflanked on the right, which was not a problem for her when she got into politics. You know, initially, Rebecca Clayfish was sort of the defining figure on the right wing of Wisconsin politics. But in those days, the fight was defined not by the, you know, a fight over whether the 2020 election was legitimate, which it was. It was defined by issues such as abortion rights, gay rights, stuff like that. And on those issues, she staked out a very far-right, social right-wing position.
Sure.
What she's now finding out is that the Republican Party is not so focused on those things anymore. I mean, certainly those are big issues for the GOP, there's no doubt. But that they've got sort of a new mantra, and this new mantra is this authoritarian, anti-small-D Democratic, hardcore pressure to dismantle, in many senses, Wisconsin democracy and to undermine the... Anthem's got the territory claimed, right? He's the man. He took on Robin Voss, who is a, you know, sort of unannounced supporter of Rebecca Clayfish for governor. And so clearly stick up the turf. Clayfish is now trying to, you know, move into that ground. There's a reason for that, because Kevin Nicholson and Tim Michaels, these candidates are going, they're very right wing to that, and they'll mouth some of the Trump cliches, but they're much more presenting themselves as sort of classic, you know, Republican conservative business types, especially Michaels. And so Clayfish has lost some of her territory. She's got to get the nuts, right? She needs the extremists to make it through this primary. And that's why she's pivoting toward the Rantham turf. But it isn't going to work. I mean, a Rantham backer isn't going to look at somebody who's supported by Robin Voss, who in the Marquette University poll turns out to be like the least popular person in Wisconsin.
John, hold that thought. More Devil's Advocates. My fine guest, John Nichols from The Nation. We'll be right back.